and I don't look all that ragged for all the time.
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.
Underneath me where my frame is rusted thin.
Well, speaking of a frame that's rusted thin, joining us in the studio is a very good friend of mine, the one and only Chuck Ealy. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for coming. I'm sorry we're late.
Will you forgive me? Drew. You got a little room in time.
Do you feel rusted?
No. I feel good.
Do you?
I feel good. Feel solid.
Because, it's been 30 years since you threw your last touchdown pass.
Yes, at least that.
Just thought I'd bring that up.
But mentally, it's what you live for. You see it every day. You see it, and you see the games. You know what it's like, and you feel good about it.
You have got a movie on your life.
You know, it's not a movie. It's a documentary.
It's a movie.
You know, if they ever do a movie, you know, that's another thing.
Okay,
but right now, it's true. A movie sometimes gets really untrue.
Yeah, well, this hopefully is true. I've heard many good things about this. Undefeated, the Chuck Ealy story.
Right.
There's a special preview screening of this documentary film at the Living Arts Center in Mississauga this Tuesday.
Yeah, this Tuesday at 7 p.m.
You're raising a bit of money for some charity stuff, too.
Yeah, I have a foundation now that's worked out in the States, and we're starting a little bit of it now. And so what we're trying to do is do things for kids. See, that's another thing about this. There's another story behind the story of the documentary that I'll relate to the Canadian side that I've been doing in the States over the last 3 or 4 years.
Tell me about the foundation.
Well, it's kind of a three-part series. One, we're starting a documentary by two alumni. Then two other alumni came and was trying to get me inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame.
InductChuck.com.
InductChuck.com. And the reason why I'm not in there is a reason that doesn't make a lot of sense to most people after winning 35 straight games and having an NCAA record, but it has to do with technical reasons with the National Football Foundation. So in the midst of doing that, we decided that we wanted to do something for Toledo. And we were working together, three of us, and we created this foundation to help young kids in the States, especially in Toledo and my hometown, Portsmouth, in support of building a better attitude, building and we call it undefeated spirit, and build off of that program.
Okay, some folks may actually not know who you are. I mean, I know you're a star, yeah. But maybe not everybody does. You came to Toledo after winning the 1967 Ohio State Championship for Notre Dame High School, capping an 18-0 career. In spite of a perfect college record, Toledo University's highest ranking was number 12 in the AP poll in 71. An ESPN site posted the 100 greatest moments in college football going back as far as 1935. But while your career as an amateur athlete was an astounding 53-0, folks. Mm-hmm. 53-0. That's insane.
That was nice.
Gee whiz. 53-0, yeah. Your exploits at Toledo was ranked 89th on the list.
Right, right.
And that's got to tick you off.
Well, no, that makes me happy that they could, what do you mean, be 89th?
I think you should be up there.
Oh, no.
I
mean, you're talking about things like Jim Thorpe. You're talking about some
Doug Flutie's big Hail Mary.
Yeah, you've got all kind of things. I was just happy that they recognized us in the top 100.
You're so stinking humble. Unbelievable. Ranked above your career on the list were such items as Northwestern's Rose Bowl run in 95, the Woody Hayes punch of Clemson's Charlie Bowman in 78. That's above yours, man.
Well, they're the choosers. I'm just sort of there.
How did the streak not get in the way of himself? And did they actually call you that?
What?
The streak?
No, they didn't call me the streak.
Because that's what it was called. It was called the streak.
Well, yeah, I mean, The part of the thing, even with the documentary, I was telling people, I said, you never think about it while you're going through it. You never realize it.
Yeah.
And I said, one guy asked me, he said, how did you do that? I mean, how did you do that? I said, one play at a time. I said, because you one play you go, and next play you go, then the game's over, you win it, then it's your game, you know, game films, you review it, you go to the next game.
Right.
And you never have time to sort of look at it and think of it as a streak. We didn't really. And all of a sudden somebody says, oh, you got a streak. I said, oh, well, that's nice, but we got a game this week. So we don't know what's going to happen. So it wasn't until it was all over that I said to one of my defensive backs, I said, you know, I don't think we really understood what we did here. When it was about the 34th game, I said, we knew we were going to probably win in the last two, but just by the nature of what we had done. I said, I don't think we fully realize and appreciate what we've done.
Do you think the Patriots had a grasp when they were coming up against the Giants about this streak they were in?
Yeah, they had a streak that was in one season.
Yeah.
You know, basically what was going on. I mean, they didn't think about the numbers as much as being undefeated.
Right, but this is the name of your documentary is Undefeated,
right.
And the Giants went in facing this undefeated thing.
Yeah.
And they choked.
Well, choke is it's the ratios, it's the numbers. Well, I mean, they lost, and so therefore you could say they choked. But I think
I watched the game. They choked.
Hey, that was a heck of a pass the guy caught on his helmet to be able to win the game. So I wouldn't necessarily call it a joke. But.
Oh man. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, how did you not get in the way of yourself? Right. I mean. You're saying, well, it was one game at a time. You know, you sound like one of those typical athlete interviews that Mark Osborne used to give all the time after a Leaf game.
Yeah.
You know? how did you not become an arrogant jerk? How did you not choke? How did you not get in the way of yourself? I'm all that in a bag of chips. Even today, when people interviewed you about this movie,
yeah.
The people said, you have this, it's almost like you have the right to go off at the fact that you didn't get the accolades you deserve. But you don't. Now, look, you're a classy guy, and there's humility there, but...
Well, but here's the deal, Drew. I said there were games where we played really poorly offensively, and nobody recognized the defense for saving us for winning that game. We win a game 10-7, okay? We could have lost in, but it wasn't our offense or what I did was there. The defense held us in that game. And so when you go through that process, you go through a process not realizing what you're doing, especially at that time there was no ESPN, there was no CNN, there was no heavy-duty news flavor, so nobody was coming constantly with the pressure of it all. Yeah. It just became very systematic that we finished the season, undefeated. Go to the next season, we're undefeated again. And then we start another one.
Was there anything about your persona that was insecure in that? Now, bear with me. Mm-hmm. I can just imagine
I'm afraid of this question.
Yeah, I know. A lot has been said about the time and the culture of the day, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was back in the Remember the Titans movie day where the race issue was going on.
Huge,
and
huge.
Right 4 Dead in Ohio, as Crosby, Stills, Nash used to sing. Was there anything in your psyche at the time that said, just be thankful for what you got, you're a black man living today?
No.
I'm sorry, listen
to that question. They said, you know, you live in the moment of what was happening, and you knew where you were. I mean, part of the documentary shows some things in regards to the civil rights movement and Martin Luther King. And there's some pictures in there that were very reflective of some very dangerous moments of the time. And we knew where we were. We knew what was happening. I remember going down to Toledo, first time I get there from a small town in Portsmouth, Ohio, going to Toledo, in the middle of the town, the Black Panthers are marching down the street with guns and bullets across their chest. And I say, so I know those moments, and those are some real things that took place.
Yeah.
So, but you knew at that particular time, those were the elements that were going on, so you just kept your focus on your school and that program.
So you didn't have the mindset of, look, I'm just a poor little black man, I should just be thankful with what I had. And in other words, you had the audacity, some would say, to write the NFL and say, you don't need to be having me running 40s because I'm not going to be the running back or the DB or anything else, the linebacker. I want to be a quarterback. That's it.
Yeah. Well, here's the clue, Drew. For me, going to school was about education. It wasn't about playing football. I used football to get me to go get my education. I never dreamt about playing professional football either in the NFL or in the Canadian Football League. That was never my goal. I didn't even realize that was going to be a possibility until my junior or senior year. And then it wasn't an issue because I still was going to have my degree. And I was going to be able to do some other things. And this is what I tell young kids nowadays. That football thing, that basketball thing is going to end. What won't end is if you do get your education and you do some things. And education is not just about 4 + 4 = 8. It's about life stuff and the things that you're going to learn, how you're going to deal with life as a whole. And so football was not anything that I wanted to have control me. And there's a book out by a guy by the name of John Donakis. It's called A Choice of Colors. It's about African-American quarterbacks that came to Canada and began to make a difference in Canada and the NFL because we chose not to. Bernie Custis, myself, Conridge Holloway are all in his book. And we're talking about why we made a choice to come to Canada and play quarterback versus sacrificing and trying to go play another position in the NFL.
So you weren't going to play the man's game?
No, I wasn't going to play the game at all. I mean, because it wasn't necessary. I have what I wanted to have in getting my degree.
What I meant by that was you weren't going to lay down and sacrifice who you really were and play another position so you could play in the NFL.
Right. That was not my goal.
Because some would say, well, the reason you didn't get in the NFL as a quarterback, it wasn't really because you're black. It's because you wrote this letter, and I could just see the NFL guys sitting there going, who the heck does this dude think he is?
Well, I mean, we already knew the cards there. There was no black quarterbacks in the NFL anyway. We already knew what the cards were saying, and Marlon Briscoe and some other people.
So you weren't risking a whole lot.
I wasn't risking anything, and I didn't have any fear of that. And I wasn't being a jerk about how I was writing a letter. I just expressed my interest that please do this if you're going to take me into the NFL.
Did you really grow up dirt poor?
Dirt poor.
Walked to school. Uphill.
I tell the story about these kids that sometimes I talk to about this kid named Junior, which is I'm a Charles Ely Jr.
Yeah.
And I tell them this story because there was a time when I came home and I remember my mom had gone to work and there was no food in the house. The only thing that was left, one of those Weet-a-Bit biscuit things. There was no milk. There was no sugar, and I was hungry enough that I had to eat that because there was no other food in the house. And so I understood what being poor was like based off of what being raised by a single mom who had an eighth grade education.
Where did Mr. Ely Sr. go?
Oh, he was around. I mean, you got to remember, I was born in 1950, so in the mid late 50s, these were war veterans coming back, and then there was a lot of single moms in that community, in the projects. Husbands and whatever reason, whatever got into their heads, gone different directions. And so they would be in the same town, but not necessarily taking care of their children.
Is your dad still alive?
My dad's passed away, so is my mom.
When your dad passed, were things resolved or not?
Oh, no. I was well gone past when he passed away. You mean resolved between him and I?
Yeah, like in other words, did you go to the funeral?
Of course.
Well, I didn't know. I didn't know whether he was even in your life.
It was kind of one of those things that you grow up with. You grow up with him being in the same town. You see him. You say, hey, he see come to a game or something.
Yeah.
But very little was done to support the family in that context other than what my mother was doing.
But there'd be a big difference in attitude at Earlene's funeral.
Yes, big difference in Earlene. Earlene was the mom and the dad, and therefore was the guiding structure that probably pushed me. She only had an eighth grade education, so she drove the process in my head for me to go ahead and further my education and make sure I didn't have to live the way she had to try to bring me up. Now, mind you, with no money, with all those other things that you miss, the love and the mentorship of people within the community did a lot to help protect us and bring us up right.
I know your life today, and I know when I say this, I really know that you have come a long way from the government housing project in Portsmouth, Ohio.
Yeah.
A long, long way.
Well, that depends, yeah.
Long. Okay. What do you miss about your mom?
Well, I miss more so the love that she showed me and just the the sense that she had for people, the reality of just being a person. I miss her playing with her grandkids when they were small and having that joy of seeing that. So you miss a lot of those things where a lot of people think that education is the end all, but there's a lot of things that people have that don't have the education that she didn't have that comes out in respect and love and the things that teach you how to deal with people in reality. So that's what I miss most.
I cannot even imagine going to the public pool on a 4,000 degree day and you not being allowed to swim in it.
Mm-hmm. Well,
does that really go down?
Oh, yeah, that went down. That went down. Like, we had a public pool that we couldn't go to. My cousin died in the quarry because he couldn't go. And so, therefore, it was one of those sit-ins that we had to go to that I went to at age 12, 13, got thrown in the back of a paddy wagon and taken away. So it was just a sign of the times, late 50s, early 60s. I mean, this was one of the historical things, and that we're trying to make sure that people remember, and part of that's in the documentary, because we're trying to say there's a part of history between the late 50s, early 60s and up to the early 70s that was very dramatic in American history that creates what we have now and the new president that we're bringing ahead.
Chuck Ealy, CFL All-Star, MVP, and Rookie of the Year. He led an undefeated team through high school and an undefeated team through college, but no NFL team would give him a quarterback shot, really. So he went to Canada and won the Grey Cup for Hamilton. First three games didn't go too well, though, for you.
Oh, no. I mean, the first three games, one, I didn't start. But when I did start in Edmonton, we got beat up pretty good. It was a tough game.
Yeah.
And, we learned some things from that game. But then after we got back, you know, after a few cans and bottles coming out of the stands at Hamilton, we figured we better win. So we started to win. We won about 11 straight after that.
Dude, that's a tough arena, man. I'm telling you, Iverwind Stadium.
They know their football, boys.
Man.
So you better be good when you come out there and play.
I remember I played for the Junior Tire Cats, and I had a game out there, and our third down center was... I'm sure he was on drugs because I had snaps that were 30 feet above my head and some skimming along the ground. You know, anyway. So one of these shots came and I scrambled and running around trying to get the ball and I got smoked. And I'm a punter, man. I don't like getting hit. Okay. Us kickers are a different breed.
Yeah.
Kick the ball, run off the field, scream like a girl, right? That's us. So smoked on the Iverwind Stadium.
Yeah.
And, dude, every other arena we played in had some decent padding underneath the AstroTurf.
No.
Not Iverwind, man.
No.
That was like playing on concrete.
It was tough.
Oh,
it was hard stuff.
Yeah. On Tuesday, January 13th, a documentary on Chuck's incredible life entitled Undefeated, the Chuck Ealy Story. It's going to be shown at the Living Arts Center in Mississauga. Doors are open at 6:30. Tickets are $20. You want to call 905-306-6000, 905-306-6000 for tickets. Proceeds are going to go to Chuck Ealy Foundation in support of Mississauga Youth Development. Induct Chuck is a website you want to go to have some fun and look around. And ChuckEalySpeaks.com is another one that you want to go to. I first met you at Teen Ranch 100 years ago, and a little known fact here to all of our listeners. You're the guy that sold me Jesus.
Mm-hmm. And he wept like a baby.
I did too. Okay, thanks for bringing that up.
Okay, I thought I'd get you back one.
And now you're the big kahuna over there with Investors Group, regional something or other.
What's regional director at Mississauga Central, the office at Square One.
Sharpest mind on the block. seriously, like I know a quarterback's got to be sharp, but you are just so sharp. As a matter of fact, you've seen my eyes glaze over more than once when you go on about investing stuff.
Yeah, well, I think that the business is really a fun opportunity. I really do. I think it's probably more self-help for people than they understand. Because as soon as you say Investors Group, people think about investments. And they look at this market now, and they go, oh, how are you doing? I said, I'm doing fine. And I said, you know, based on what I understand about the total package of what we do. So I enjoy it because it is like quarterbacking again. You hire people, you train people, you look for good people to be able to give good help to other people. And so it's very enjoyable for me.
Tell me a story. I'm kind of bouncing all over the place, but I keep thinking about this movie or this documentary that is going to be shown on Tuesday. And I'm trying to imagine some scenes that are going to be in there and the stories of how the streak almost came to an end,
mm-hmm.
like the day the wind died.
Yeah. Oh, well, that was the storyline is kind of built on two teams that were a rivalry team in Bowling Green.
Okay.
And what had happened is I had taken over the starting role as a sophomore from a junior quarterback who was going to be a senior during spring ball. So I had taken over the game, and we had played Ohio U and beat them, and they were a big thing because they had Cleve Bryant, who was supposed to be the Mid-American Conference quarterback. And the next game, we were going down to Bowling Green. Now, this was the big game. This is the huge rivalry. Bowling Green was 20 miles away from University of Toledo, so it's a huge rivalry. And it was a game where it's a wind tunnel. I don't know if you've ever gone down the I-75 heading for Florida for any in there. You see the stadium on your right called Bowling Green. It's just open air. And there was a wind tunnel that was there, and we had the last drive. We were down 26-24 we were down, and I had to get a drive against the wind. And, you know, the story gets bigger and bigger every time you hear it. This 100-mile-an-hour wind is coming down the road. I'm thinking, it wasn't that windy, you know. But as we drove down the field, we got to the
good story with facts.
Okay, yeah, right. So we got to about the 20, and everybody kind of like, well, you know, they're not going to be able to kick a 30-yard field going into that wind. And it seemed as though the wind did come. And then the guy by the name of Crotch kicked the field goal. We won 27.
His name is Crotch?
Crotz.
Okay.
Crotz. Ken Crotz.
Okay.
C-R-O-T-S.
All right. Just want to make sure. Didn't want to mess up that name. Do you have any God moments from back in those days? Like, did you sense the hand of God on your life as you became this 53-0 guy?
No, I still went to church and fundamentally did things that were very normal for somebody who really believed in God. I wasn't always involved with church at that time, in the sense of what I do now as far as where I go, and what I did. So, you prayed and you asked for God's help. I mean, when I was in high school, I went to a Catholic school, and we used to go to the chapel before every game. I mean, the coach would walk us down the hallway in our stocking feet, and we would go into the chapel and say our little prayers, and we would go out. And so that always led to victory, so it was always a good thing. So you
keep on going.
But, no, so there was no really heavy-duty God moments that were going on in that process.
Give us the synopsis of your God journey here. You know, when did you buy into the Jesus stuff?
Well, the Jesus stuff. I think what happened is when I went to Winnipeg, we were involved with Athletes in Action. Many years ago, and I was always in tune with a belief that Christ existed and that he was a part of my life. I didn't know how to walk that. I didn't know how to take the reality of the love and the forgiveness and deal with what some people you would say is grace, is the forgiveness of that process. It wasn't until I was involved with a guy named Doc Ashelman and Athletes in Action that took place in Winnipeg, and I got a full, better understanding of the reality of what Christ being in one's life would be like versus Christ being on the outside. And not be making it a religious movement, but more so a relationship that was involved with your everyday life and not about works and things that you have to chop down the cherry tree to get good pluses and minuses. So it was at that time, back when I was playing in Winnipeg, that Jesus became a part of my internal life by me inviting him in.
Typical athlete interview question.
Mm-hmm.
Think back in all the years of CFL glory. Highlight?
I think probably the Grey Cup was the highlight, the rookie of the year, the thing. And because Drew, whether people understand this or not, or believe it, I said when I come to the CFL, I said I only want to play this game 5 to 7 years. I knew exactly what I do. The game of football wasn't a necessary thing for me. I still enjoyed it, and I came with the purpose of being able to play it for a certain time and then just walk away. Because what I really went to school for was to get my education, and I was very sort of anxious, as I look back at it now, of putting that process to work and getting involved with that. So when I came and won the Grey Cup, it was like, okay, what else is there to do? And that probably was, and I look back on it now, not necessarily a good mindset to have because, you know, I kind of went, had some good years, some good mediocre years. But I think when I look back at it now, I think I might have been ready to go after I did that. But I just didn't make that type of decision. And just I finished on the 5, and at 7 years, I retired. I was asked to keep playing, but I said, that's it. And I was able to walk away.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, some guys don't know when to walk.
Yeah, yeah.
Is Hank Elissek playing again this year?
You know, it's funny. There's a young man that called me the other day about, I won't mention the other names, but about a career. And he's doing some work with Hank Elissek. And Hank Elissek is around. And he said, oh, you ought to see me. I said, I'm really big. And now, no, I'm really thin. And now Hank Elissek is really big. So I don't know what Hank looks like because he was just sort of describing the changes in their body with chemistry. But he's still here. He's actually lives in Mississauga.
Yeah, I think he's still in the same place. Yeah. Hank really was gracious to me. He spent a lot of time with me back in the days of kicking the ball. Z was the first one that got me into it.
Yeah.
Speaking of nuts,
yeah,
that is one of the funniest cats. I got an email from him, and it came in through the website. We're talking about Zen and Anderson. For those of you who don't know, we're talking about one of the craziest names and craziest cats in ever in the CFL.
Right.
And he sent an email saying, "Hey, nice show you got there. Why don't you interview some real guests? I'll go on your show."
That's Z.
That's Z. I like him. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, I hope this event on Tuesday night goes off. I really do. I mean, primarily so you can raise a bit of coin for your youth foundation-y stuff there, whatever the heck it's called. But I think it's going to be a great little flick. Again, we want to let everyone know, Tuesday, January 13th, the documentary on Chuck Ealy's incredible life called Undefeated, the Chuck Ealy Story. At the Living Arts Center in Mississauga. Doors open at 6:30. Tickets are $20. Call 905-306-6000. That's 905-306-6000 for tickets. I don't know. It's like I'm selling steak knives here. Proceeds go to the Chuck Ealy Foundation in support of Mississauga youth development. And the website's inductchuck.com. If you feel like going there and maybe can they vote? Can they like send an email? Can they protest?
Yeah. You know what they could do also? If you go to this other website, you want to see a little bit of the trailer.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
The
www.wgte.com. www.wgbh.org/undefeated. You got that?
Wow. Say it again.
Okay. www.wgte.org/undefeated. And they'll give you about a minute and a half trailer.
I've seen the trailer.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, that's good.
It's tantalizing. Yeah. Thanks for coming in. It's been a while. I mean, you've been on the show. This is your third time here.
Yeah.
The other two times you talked about money.
Yeah.
Now we're talking about your life. You're a cool cat. I like you.
Well diversified. Do you know what
I mean? Don't start talking investors' language for me, man. I do not get that stuff. All right, folks. When we come back from our short break, Carl Medaris, he's the author of Muslims, Christians, and Jesus, Gaining Understanding and Building Relationships. You want to stay tuned for that interview? And then, I don't know, we're going to do something after that. We're rounding the final stretch. Have a listen to David Wilcox. In road, locomotive.